What's Trending?
What's Trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. Number one is, well, Mike Dana, unfortunately, not practicing again today. Still dealing with a pec strain. It's already Thursday. I think we know how this is trending.
He will not.
For Sunday against the 49ers. That's even after a bye week. So it tells you kind of, you know, how serious it is, but also how cautious they're probably being. It's a long football season. But Mike Dana last year was one of their most important pass rushers. I think the evolution of Tershawn Warden has probably allowed them to be even more patient because of his high-level play. We know the guy that ends up benefiting playing time the most, that's your favorite player, Felix Anudike-Uzomah. His snap percentage keeps going up because of Mike Dana. At least in week four when he didn't play, his snaps went up around 25%.
I guess the question I have is, though, is his production going up?
Yeah.
And so far, the answer to that has been no. Also, the fact that a defensive lineman's gone and his play is only at 25%, still probably speaks to the lack of he's getting on the field. Next up on What's Trending, NLCS and ALCS both have a game tonight. The Dodgers got up 2-1 in their series last night after an 8-0 win on the Mets. Shohei Ohtani, I do not care what StatCast said. There's no way that ball only went 410 feet. 5-10 maybe? 7-10, I believe, before I believed 4-10. That ball was so gone. They hammered the Mets. Not a single game of that series has been close. They're the late game tonight. 7:08 first pitch. The Yankees and Guardians are at 4:08 Eastern time. 3:08, actually. Central time, at least, or so, 4:08 Central time, at least on this one. They'll go to Cleveland for the first time, trailing 2-0. You think Cleveland makes it a series?
I don't.
I don't either.
Judge is awake now is a problem for them, too.
Yep. He made it deep enough in the postseason, he's going to start mattering. And unfortunately for them, that's probably all she wrote for Cleveland. I also don't think they're going to make it a series. I'll be pleasantly surprised, I guess, if they do.
Next up on What's Trending, we've been keeping an eye on what's going on with Diamond Sports. They're in charge of those regional sports networks like Bally for the Royals, etc. The latest is that Diamond, who is in bankruptcy court, they filed last night to confirm FanDuel would be taking over as its naming rights partner for the chain of RSNs. So if, in fact, the Royals end up renegotiating with what we know as Bally, if they're back on that next year, it will be called FanDuel TV or FanDuel Kansas City or FanDuel Midwest, or it would be
it
that.
It won't be called Bally's.
It will not. If they're back with them, they could also be with somebody else altogether, but that's just the latest update for the promotion and the exclusive integration partner for sports betting. If they actually go with them, expect to see during games a lot more integration with betting content.
I will say most of the reports are suggesting that they were always planning on dropping the Royals as part of the bankruptcy hearing, although that hasn't happened yet, but that the two would at least entertain some negotiations in between the two. If not, I assume they join the other three teams that have already this offseason been taken in-house by Major League Baseball. So we'll see where the Royals are streaming next year. We do not know yet. Next up on What's Trending, the New York Liberty. We said the New York sports teams hadn't won anything in a long time. We were leaving out women's sports, the only sports group they actually win in. Liberty, the New York Liberty, made a 15-point comeback last night, are now up 2-1 in the WNBA Finals, one game away from securing their championship. What a shot by Sabrina towards the end of the game there to put them ahead for the final match. But they're just now one game away from winning the WNBA Final.
Lastly, on What's Trending, don't forget we're going to be out in Las Vegas a week from today, broadcasting live from Circa Resort and Casino, Circa Las Vegas. You can go to CircaLasVegas.com. If you're still planning a last-minute flight, maybe you don't have a hotel figured out in Vegas, that is the place to stay. We'll be hanging out there all week, into the weekend as well. We've got our big party on Friday night. So if you're going to be out there and you want to join our happy hour event, you RSVP, gets you a free cocktail. It gets you entered to win tickets to the game on Sunday. It gets you entered to win a day bed for Stadium Swim, which is that poolside club, which has 143-foot screen to watch every sporting event you could possibly imagine. The weather's going to be great out there. We hope to see some of you there. Just sent out a few more RSVP links to people on the text line. If you want one, if you know you're going to be in Vegas, if you have a family member that's going to be in Vegas, the event is free. Right, 21 or older. That's the only thing with that on Friday night. But 913-586-7965 is the text line. We'll shoot you over an RSVP link if you want to join us on Friday night out in Las Vegas next week.
I would just tell you, if you're thinking about going, get the RSVP link. Get on the list. That way you're registered for all that stuff in case you make it out. So like he said, 913-586-7965.
All right, let's get back to the Chiefs and a man that's going to be in Vegas, obviously calling the Raiders game in a couple weeks right here on 96.5. The Fan is Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. He's presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. I don't know when you're flying into Vegas. I know you got a little event going on that Saturday as well, but I don't know if your flight gets in on time Friday night. You gotta swing by the happy hour, man. Did we lose Danon?
Hey, what's going on?
There we go.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. We got some things going on. I'm doing an appearance with Mark McMillan, Mighty Mouse, former teammate here in Kansas City. So, yeah, it should be fun to get out to Vegas. But we got business in Niner country. It's going to be a very emotional game for them, I'm sure, with how we fared against them, especially in the big games in recent years. So get this one tackled, get 6-0, and then we'll have some fun in Vegas.
It's a rare spot, Danon, where the Chiefs are underdogs going into a game. We know Patrick Mahomes has fared very well in those. He's 11-1 against the spread. He's got 10 wins straight up when they're a dog. So this is a spot where he usually performs extremely well. How do you view this just straight up matchup and where the Chiefs are right now off the bye week?
Yeah, you know what? You have to wonder, how does a 3-3 team, even though they've sustained a lot of injuries, how is a 3-3 team a favorite against a 5-0 team who beat them in the Super Bowl? Now, it's not a big deal for us. We've been underdogs before. Patrick Mahomes has been obviously a guy that stepped up to that challenge or that obstacle. We feel comfortable where we are, especially not only having played them and beaten them, but also coming off a bye. And Andy Reid and Patrick's record coming off extended breaks and byes has been phenomenal as well. So it's going to be an uphill battle. They got a lot of incentive on their side. I've been in that position. Heck, this Chiefs team has been in that position. Let's remember week one against the Ravens. You're playing against a team that had all the incentive in the world and all the emotion on their side to win, and they came up a couple of inches short. San Francisco, the difference is that we're going out and playing on their home field. I know their fans will be rabid. I have some family members that are Niners fans that are already talking trash, and I expect that to increase as we get up to the game as well. But they are definitely a team that, and I know this might sound crazy to say because it's always the opposite, but they are a team that's better than their record. They are definitely better than their record. They are still a team that's part of the cream of the crop of the NFC, and we're going to have our hands full.
Danon, how frustrating does it get to be on one side of a lopsided rivalry, right? I mean, these two teams have played in the two most important games for either franchise, right? In 5 years, they've played in two massive games. Chiefs have come out on top. George Kittle was saying in a podcast, he hasn't even beaten them once. He said they got one preseason win his rookie year when he didn't even play. That is the last time in his mind the 49ers even got the Chiefs. Like, is it frustrating to be like, we play in big games, but it doesn't seem like it matters because one team always wins?
It absolutely is frustrating, especially if you feel like you're better than the other team. And you have to believe as a player that you're always better than your opponents. In this case, I'm sure they have to wonder whether they are truly better because of the injuries that they sustained. Now, they've gotten most of their guys back except for CMC. But I was in this position as well. We played the Indianapolis Colts. People remember back in 95, the Lynn Elliott game, and then playing them again the next year. And it just always seemed like they were the nemesis. No matter how good we were, we just always had a problem with them. So not to the level of what the Niners have experienced with losing two Super Bowls, but at the same time, the feeling is the feeling. And you wonder, and that could be a feather in our cap in regards to getting this victory, because when the fourth quarter comes and hopefully the game is, whether it's not tight on our side, which would be great, but if it's tight on their side, up or down by 4 points, some of the remnants of the Super Bowls come back to haunt them in regards to how they get tightened up. Maybe in coaches' decisions, what they decide in regards to putting the ball in Brock Purdy's hands or trying to play it safe. Those things, doesn't matter how much you prepare all week, doesn't matter what your game plan is, we've seen how Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs team takes people out of their game plan. We have to believe, and we've talked about this before, we have to believe that John Harbaugh did not go into the AFC Championship thinking he was going to run the ball less than 10 times. But yet, he felt the pressure based on that first drive and us driving down the field that they had to get away from their game plan. That might be a similar circumstance subconsciously to Kyle Shanahan. Consciously, you don't do those things. It's subconsciously that you start to think, man, let's try not to lose this game versus going for the win. And a lot of coaches have made that mistake against this Chiefs team and haven't fared well.
We're talking to former Chiefs wide receiver Danan Hughes here on 96.5 The Fan. Of course, Sunday afternoon right here on The Fan, you will hear Danan Hughes along with Mitch Holthus, Josh Klingler, and Dan Israel as they get you set for the game and obviously during the game as well. Now, we saw movement in the wide receiver market this week, Danan. Devontae Adams goes to the Jets. Amari Cooper goes to the Buffalo Bills. Did you think that Amari Cooper was a realistic possibility in Kansas City? And if the Chiefs go in the next couple of weeks and continue to get Juju Smith-Schuster type performances like we saw, do you feel like they're still going to need to go out and get a wide receiver?
Yeah, I just was never of the school of thought. I was never on team go get somebody. Not fully, especially at the wide receiver position. When you have options like Juju, who came back, has been familiar with the organization, familiar with the terminology, familiar with the quarterback, and everything that's involved, I feel like the one position with this team that you just can't go get somebody mid-season or in the first quarter of the season and expect them to have any immediate impact is the wide receiver. I just think that although we are a finely tuned offense, we have the greatest quarterback to play the game, it takes time. And considering maybe if the bye week was in week 8 or week 10 or later in the season like it has been in recent years, maybe I would think that. But now with us having the bye week just this past week, we're talking about without the number one seed, we're going to have 15 straight weeks of football. Oof. When would that receiver catch up? When would he garner enough trust and understanding of the offenses, the shifts, the motions, the improv, being on the same page with Patrick? When would that come with 15 straight weeks of football? I just didn't see it happening. Now, to have talent is great, and if we sustain another injury, my answer might be different, but I just feel like the comfort level of where we're at. And then taking into consideration, let's say it was Amari Cooper, as good as he is a receiver and playmaking ability that he's had. Like, I wonder, and it's a metric that we can never measure, but by the time he would get up to speed, by the time he would be comfortable, by the time Patrick and Matt Nagy would be comfortable with him being a staple in the offense, would that time would have been better served by having a Nico Remigio or Justin Ross or getting more reps to Xavier or having Juju have a part of the package? Would that have served us better than getting those guys who are familiar with the system up to speed and involved? I don't know that answer. That would be the main question that I would have. But I just feel like we're in a good place right now as long as we don't sustain any more injuries.
If you look at what the defense has been doing, I had said on yesterday's show, day before, I don't remember, that I think this defense is better than last year's. It's already playing better than than last year's defense was at this point. But the carryover effect from where they were seems to me that they're already there. I think the single biggest reason why, Danan, is Chris Jones. I mean, Steve Spagnuolo was just talking to the media and said, I can promise you the other 10 guys on defense are happy Chris Jones gets the attention he gets. I know he's been a monster his entire career, but is he at a completely, is he at an even new level for normal Chris Jones? Because it seems like he's getting double and triple teamed on every snap.
Well, I mean, that's the recipe for trying to quiet him down. It's kind of one of those situations where you can't stop him. You just kind of hope to contain him. I know we use that vernacular more in the NBA than anywhere else, but it reigns true here with Chris Jones. He knows he's the dominant force. His maneuverability around the defensive line, whether it's over the center, over the guard, or outside the tackle, creates a lot of headaches for opposing teams, especially when he does it like when they're set up at the line of scrimmage and you see him move guys around just to get to take advantage of one-on-ones that he knows he can win. That creates issues from a protection standpoint. Now, they got a guy over there named Trent Williams that if Chris Jones lines up against him, I'm sure Trent is saying, I don't want any help. I want to be able to nullify his the business that he's trying to create on my own. But what about the other guys? What about the other five guys or four guys on the offensive line? What are they going to do when Chris Jones lines up against them? and then the creativity of Steve Spagnuolo in the blitz packages. We've seen our blitzes specifically equate to wins at the end of the game by confusion of the protection and by the freak-out nature of the quarterback. I mean, that happened in the first series against the Saints and Derek Carr. Like, he was already freaked out by our blitz package and totally confused. And, like, I don't think Brock Purdy is any more mobile than Derek Carr, definitely not more mobile than Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow, but yet we've seen how this defense can affect even those top echelon guys. So, yeah, Chris Jones is a man-child. He's a force to be reckoned with, and I'm sure there's a lot of late nights or early wake-up calls to offensive coordinators having to deal with him.
Danon, we talked to you during training camp about, at that time, the cornerback number two battle, and you know, is it Josh Williams or Jalen Watson, and who's going to emerge? Even the coaching staff openly talked about how nobody had really risen to the top, and they're going to have to play this thing out. And yet, fast forward, it's the middle of October, and Jalen Watson's been doing an incredible job, and there hasn't been the drop-off from losing L'Jarius Sneed.
Yeah, there hasn't been at all. And I think part of that indecision early was the injuries that were sustained by both of those guys during training camp. You just didn't really have the full sample size of which guy would assume the role. And I think the decision was excellent. I don't know if Joshua Williams would have been as good as Jalen Watson, but we do know what we're seeing from Jalen Watson is a lot of confidence for a guy in his young years and taking up a spot that you knew with Trent McDuffie and how efficient he was opposite him, that you knew that was going to garner a lot of attention. And he stepped up and he's doing it in such a confident fashion. He's not getting the penalties downfield because of indecision or uncertainness of his abilities, like we've seen from defensive backs in the past, getting too handsy downfield, not sure when to turn their head, maybe being too physical because they weren't sure about their speed. He's playing like a wily veteran, and I'm sure that he learned a lot from L'Jarius, has gleaned a lot from Trent McDuffie, and they just work in sync together so well. And they're physical, which is really cool to see at that defensive back position. Across the board, when you talk about Shamari Connor, Justin Reed, Brian Cook being more of the center field player, and those other guys being like hybrid linebackers. Like, I played with some physical corners, James Hasty, Kevin Ross, Dale Carter, and I remember how that affected opposing teams when wide receivers didn't want to block them or felt like they were going to get choked up in man-to-man bump and run coverage. And that's kind of what we've set the standard right now at the cornerback position, that we're going to be more physical than our opponents on offense, and it just shows in the stats.
Danon, knowing the injuries, if the Chiefs win on Sunday, is it the single most impressive win they've had this year? And you said they're better than their record, the 49ers.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that. I think the wins against the Ravens and against the Bengals might be better. Time will tell, especially with us being on the road, and depending on how it unfolds, that answer could change. But given the circumstances last year, week one, playing against the Lions, losing that game by 1 point, coming back here after the same type of celebration and dropping the banner and playing against a team that had every incentive emotionally to win that game and had every opportunity late and then winning that, I feel like if we lost that game, we might not be talking about this team being 4-1. That's how important I think that win was against the Ravens. But this one is just as important right now because it's the next one.
Danon Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, safe travels out to Santa Clara, man. We'll be listening on Sunday right here on 96.5 The Fan.
All right, fellas, and I got Players Only coming on tonight, too, the debut.
All right.
2024 of Players Only, so I'm amped up about that. So 6 to 7 p.m. on 96.5, I'm ready.
What level do I have to have played to get an invite sometime, Danon? Take like middle school, or do I got to get all the way to the NFL?
Yeah, you might have had to have at least a cup of coffee in the NFL, man. I'm sorry.
That's fair enough.
All right, Dayton. Appreciate it. We'll be listening tonight. That's Dayton Hughes, host of Players Only tonight, 96.5 The Fan. And, of course, on Sunday, you'll hear him, Mitch Holthus, Dan Israel, Josh Klingler, all in Santa Clara right here on your home for the Chiefs. And our conversations with Dayton are presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue.
Yeah, I'm just interested to know how they kind of handle these things. Dayton doesn't think it's as impressive as I do, because I'm just looking at it objectively from the, now you have injuries and you're on the road. The bye week is the only thing that changes a little bit. The Chiefs have an added advantage anytime they're coming off a bye week based on Andy Reid's entire history as an NFL head coach, his time in Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes' record coming off of this, and somehow them being an underdog is feeding them stuff they didn't need when they were 5-0. They get to walk into a game at 5-0, undefeated, yeah, as the defending Super Bowl champion, saying they don't respect us, which is wild. And it's not that the 49ers did that. That's Vegas, right? Not the 49ers. It's the sports books who have decided to make them an underdog.
I think,
but
some
honestly,
of it
how do you ever make him an underdog? I'm just going to be honest. Yeah. How the hell are they ever a Vegas underdog? He's 10-3 as an underdog. He should never be an underdog.
This is the conversation we had entering the postseason against Buffalo, or the postseason on the road against Baltimore as well. Remember, they were underdog in those games.
And in the Super Bowl.
And in the Super Bowl, yeah. So they've been in this spot before. I agreed with Dane. We talked about it earlier in the show. I get what you're saying about the Niners. I think there's a chance it's definitely in the running for the most impressive win, even when the season is over. I'm still keeping an eye on later in the year when they're in that stretch of three games in, you know, less than two weeks, I should say, yeah, when they have the Texans and the Steelers and the Browns all in one area. That Texans win could end up being a more impressive one. We'll see where the health is on both teams at that point. The Bills on the road in a couple weeks. But I hear what you're saying. I do. All right, coming up next, we're going to get to all 32 in the NFL. And you mentioned George Kittle and how they're talking. Let's hear from Kittle and Debo a little bit and why I don't feel like this is as big of a game as everybody's making it out to be. So I'll explain that coming up next here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in about 25 minutes, we'll check in fantasy football conversation with Paul Charchian of GuillotineLeagues.com. Congrats to those of you that are still alive.
Again, I'm still alive, not for long.
Guillotine League, our Cody and Gold 96.5 The Fan Guillotine League, going strong.
I'm going down this
week.
It's
impressive if you're still around. Bye weeks are starting to come into play. Gets a little trickier. Yeah, Cody's on the chop block this week. We'll see if he actually gets chopped. He's on the block, though.
Oh, well, I'm lowest projected, and all my players are on bye.
So we'll get to Paul Charchian in the 1 o'clock hours. His Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon producing the show. You guys can always hit us up, 913-586-7965. Before we get to all 32, because I want to get to that in a second, we were just talking with Dayton Hughes about the game and obviously the feel on the Niners side of things. They've lost four in a row to Kansas City. And, you know, I told you earlier, I think the buildup for the game, like, oh my gosh, massive game. I don't really get it. I'm excited because it's another Chiefs game. They're off a bye. I'm ready. It feels like they haven't played in a month. So I'm excited for that. But the massive buildup, man, they're rivals. And oh my gosh, this is a massive game. I just don't really feel that. I think the Bills game in a couple weeks will be that. I think the Texans later will be that. The Chiefs have beat them four times in a row. It's an NFC opponent. They're 3-3, even if we think they're better than their record. You know, they don't have McCaffrey. The Chiefs are down multiple weapons. Like, I just, obviously, I want the Chiefs to win. It should be a good football game, but like, there's not massive repercussions if either team loses necessarily. And like, for it to be a big game, normally if it's a big game during the week, I can feel it. We all kind of know what I'm talking about. There's a feeling you can tell it's a huge game coming up. I don't care if it's college football and your
usually
alma mater,
get the buzz,
college basketball, whatever. Like, the feeling you had going into the Cincinnati game, there was probably some hate involved, some rivalry involved. The feeling I'm going to have, I promise you, when they go up to Buffalo, because I'm guessing the Bills are going to rattle off a bunch of wins here, and it'll be the two top teams record-wise, maybe in the AFC, going head-to-head, and the Chiefs are going to Buffalo where they beat them last year in their building. That's more intriguing than, well, the Chiefs beat the Niners in a neutral site for the fourth straight time.
I mean, I understand the notion. I'll say it's probably a bigger game for them than it is the Chiefs. But doesn't it have to be kind of a big game if it's two teams who have played in the Super Bowl two times in the last 5 years?
If the Niners would have won one of them.
I mean, the Niners are arguably, the last 5 years, if we ranked out the most successful franchise over the last 5 years, the Niners don't have the Super Bowl title, but aren't they two? I mean,
yes.
The Chiefs have three of the five Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. I don't even think the other two rando Super Bowls belonging to other teams, like the Rams, have been a more successful franchise over the last 5 years than San Francisco. They've been the second best team. They have consistently been one of the best teams in the NFC, consistently been getting to Super Bowls, getting to NFC title games, playing an incredibly important game.
I think almost the fact that the Chiefs are undefeated, you may say this is backwards for some of you, but the fact that Chiefs are undefeated makes it feel like even less of a big game. If the Chiefs
had a loss or two already,
I'd be like, well, they can't drop to 4-3, you know, whatever the math would have been, 4-2 or 4-3 or whatever. Like that makes it feel bigger. They're 5-0. Like,
they're 5-1 and they lost to an NFC team.
There's a lot of elements to me that the game doesn't have. Of course, I'm going to be locked in. I wish they weren't playing at 325. I wish they were either playing at Sunday Night Football is what I wanted. That would also make it feel bigger.
I thought you told me you liked
that. Would also make it feel bigger.
You know how this works. Other TV markets want. Jets. They're going to play new 325, 725, Monday night, Thursday night, Wednesday night. You know that.
Just like the Jets sold their soul to Aaron Rodgers, the NFL sold their primetime soul to the Jets this year, and it's backfiring in a big way. Unless we're all going to watch the train wreck. They put them in all these primetime slots, and they're going to end up as a 7 or 8-win football team.
Now, they'll start flexing them out eventually.
Maybe.
Hell, they already moved a Bears game later in the
Commanders,
season.
Because of Commanders.
Yeah.
Williams and Daniels head-to-head and all that, yeah.
Yeah. The two guys taking 1 and 2 in the draft. Mm-hmm. Both teams are winning. Both teams are near their division leads, all those things.
Again, I think I'm probably in the minority. I'm not saying like
I think it feels like a big game.
Yeah.
Maybe not as big as the Ravens game, and it won't feel as big as the Bills later because it's an NFC game. But I think a lot of this, the reason why I always feel like it's a big game is these two teams have tremendous history. They have I think Jet Chip Wasp, I think Chris Conley, I think a lot of major plays that have happened between these two. Some of the Chiefs' biggest moments have happened against this team. That's where it stands out. Now, I will say, it's big in the way that, like, a big brother picks on a little brother. It's not like we're in a heavyweight fight and this is Sonny Liston and Muhammad, and they're going back and forth and who's getting... No, it's not that. It's definitely not that. They have not beaten the Chiefs in 5-6 years. I mean, it's been years.
Yeah, 2016 or something.
So the entire Patrick Mahomes, so almost 10 years, the entire Patrick Mahomes era... The San Francisco 49ers have not beaten the Chiefs, except for one preseason game in George Kittle's rookie year, according to his podcast. But you can hear it in those guys' voices. They're
I was just 2014.
It's been a decade, 10 years since 49ers
October,
beat the Chiefs.
That's another. October of 2014 is the last time the Chiefs lost to the 49ers.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case... Look,
the Niners have won one out of the last 7 matchups.
I guess part of it is I'm thirsty for a game like you mentioned, as in the Chiefs do feel like they haven't played in a month, like you said. But part of this is I view this as a really strong litmus test. Really strong. This is one of the best teams in the NFC, has been one of the best teams in the NFC. I, like Danen, think they're better than their record. The Chiefs don't have their full complement of weapons. Since they lost their full complement of weapons as an entirety, this is the first real tough matchup, I think. The Saints are a joke. Like, I don't fear
them. They've just come back down to earth after
they came were coming crashing to earth before they faced the Chiefs. So this is the first time they're going to go against a real team, an NFL caliber team, a team with a real quarterback. You know, I know you can joke on Brock Purdy, but at some point, his numbers and his play speak higher than the 7th round pick. People can't shake the 7th round pick. He plays like a top 10 quarterback. Plain and simple. The last 2 years, he's played like a top 10 quarterback consistently. He's never dropped off of that map. So I view it as a really strong test of where are you, Kansas City? And I'm not going to get that test again to win. Like
the Bills game.
Bucks?
Maybe the Bucks, if they keep up.
Bucks on Monday Night Football. Yep. That feels like kind of a big game. If the Bucks keep playing good football, so maybe that one. Not the game after this one. That game sucks. Not the game after the Bucks. That one sucks too. It might be a month and a half before I get another big swing. So I view it like a big swing, maybe because of the time of the year, those things.
And maybe this truly is like, maybe my entire view on this whole thing is just the, spoiled Chiefs fan at this point.
Yeah,
What you just said is right. Like what you just said is like, when are they going to get tested again? My thought as you were saying it was like, I don't need to see them get tested. What? Like, get tested by who? What? Get tested. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be hopefully one of the top 2 seeds. Get tested. This isn't the first go around for Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones. I can go on and on and on. Like, get tested. What do they have to prove to me in the regular season?
I guess I view every individual. Like, you have said this before, and I think that this is why that's not the reason, but I do view it this way. You have said before, past seasons don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Does not mean anything. thing to previous success.
Yes.
So, like, this year's team is its own entity to me in a lot of ways. And this year's team is missing a lot of its parts. So I view these tests different. Does Mahomes or Andy Reid have to prove anything to me? Jack, they don't have to prove anything. But does this year's team have to prove to me that they can consistently beat high-level, high-quality teams? Sure, every year's team has to kind of reprove that. They proved it in week one when they beat the Ravens, but they had Isaiah Pacheco and Rashee Rice.
Right.
This is the first time I think it's a real opponent, an actual difficult team. I don't take the Chargers seriously. I don't take the Saints seriously. Maybe the Falcons a little, kind of, you know? And so, like, on those situations, and that, you know, and they still had Rashee Rice then. They didn't lose him to the Chargers.
I think for me, too, it's just that this team is relying on the defense, and the defense, other than Mike Danny, is healthy. That maybe the question is, hey, if they have to put up 30 points, can they? I guess that's a fair question. I just think with this defense, what have I seen to believe that they're going to, that they have to get to 30 points to win?
Like, if they have to only give up 20, can they? The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Way more than if they have to score 30, can they? When's the last time the Chiefs scored 30? Has it been like a year? I'm not even kidding.
They scored, was it 40 against the Bears last year?
Well, the last time they scored
30. The last game where they just flat out destroyed somebody. Yeah.
I'm dead serious. It's not this year. When is the last time the Chiefs scored 30 points? 30. That's not even high of a bar for
them. Is it that Bears game, or did they score 30?
They scored 30 in the Super Bowl?
No.
Overtime game?
I don't think so.
Did they not get there even in overtime? I can't remember the exact score. I mean, last year, they scored 31 against the Chargers and the Raiders on November 26th. They scored
31.
31 in a win out in Las Vegas.
That is the last November 20th.
This is who this team is.
That is almost a full calendar year without dropping 30. Dang.
Earlier when we were discussing, like, you know, the depth of target of Mahomes' throws and all this, and we were going through, like, why are they doing, you know, why is this happening? There's a lot of reasons, but also their style play going back to basically all of last season rely on the defense. You can win plenty of games scoring 24 points with this team right now because of the defense. I know that's not, I would love for them to go put up 40 this week. That's just not what we've seen, you know, from this current, 2 year stretch iteration of Chiefs football.
I feel like it's the AFC NFC thing too, because I think right now you would say the Bills would be a bigger game right now than the Niners would be.
I mean, that means three times. I looked up all last season. Just three times in the last 25 games, this team has scored 30 points. That's so un-Chiefs-like. Three times in the last 25, like 10% of the time? Ugh. They've probably scored less than 20 more times than that in that stretch, right?
They're winning in a different fashion, man.
Yeah.
Tom Brady, during his runs, relied on the defense for multiple years during their dynasty.
They've scored less than 26 times. They've scored less than 20 twice as much as they've scored 30 in the last year and a half. Oh, God. You know what? That's probably just like, it's like aesthetics. I do miss it. I'll just be honest. It has nothing to do with the win or loss.
We live in a fantasy football world, man. And so people view is,
I like offense.
You know, there's, sure, everybody, that's what the NFL has geared the league towards, offense. But this is why, like, and we all play fantasy football, or you bet on a game or whatever. And that's why most people take overs on receiving yardage, because it's not fun to take unders. Then maybe you lose because of that. But like the point is, fantasy football, and how, when the Chiefs draft a receiver in the first or second round, and we tell you that, hey, their rookie year, they might be a 600-yard receiver, everybody acts like that's a horrible thing, because we're just used to, did he give me 35 points in fantasy football this week? Oh, he only is giving me like 8 points per week. Well, he must suck. And that's how some people view these games. And right now, the Chiefs are not the best fantasy football team for you to have players It's just where we're at.
They're actually one of the worst.
You know? But that's not what they're playing
for. As somebody who's on the other side who has all of that, I think I'd rather be in your position where you can enjoy. The Bengals have they've scored 30 points four times this season.
Four times this year?
Jeez. And they're when they're 2-4.
We did have an era of that here in Kansas City. You know, like that did, like, it's not like that happened 20 years ago. That was the first couple of years of Patrick Mahomes. Put up a ton of points, crappy defense, until Spags came along, and they've shifted this entire defense to now it's one of the best in the NFL. All right, let's get to all 32. We're talking about the Saints for a second there. We also talk about teams stuck with quarterbacks at times. One scenario and situation we haven't talked a ton about is the Saints right now. So Dennis Allen kept his job for the time being. There's a good chance they have a new head coach next year. If you're like, oh, okay, they're going to blow it up. They got Spencer Rattler there. Maybe he's the QB of the future. I don't know. Derek Carr would have over $60 million, guys, in dead cap to cut him after the season. So unless he's just kind and restructures,
60 million?
6-0.
6-60. Yeah, 6-D. after the season. So whoever the next head coach is there, if Allen gets fired, is not going to be able to just go get his guy. Even if Spencer Rattler's the guy, Derek Carr is not going anywhere right now. $60 million dead cap hit. Now, they can get out after 2025. It's like $15 million. So he'll be done after that probably. But Derek Carr is not going anywhere anytime soon there in New Orleans.
I mean, you know, I'm a partial believer in Spencer Rattler. For one quarter, I look kind of smart.
27 points in the second. Shut out the rest. They lost. They got destroyed by the Bucks. But yeah, $60.1 million dead cap hit if the Saints were to cut him after this season. So he's not getting cut.
Wow. Some teams, because of the way quarterback pay is making, teams are going to kneecap themselves making bad quarterback decisions. If you pay the wrong guy, this is actually even more reason, Gold, that, like, we've had this conversation, and I've always been on the more aggressive end, and you're like, it's easier to say because it's not your job on the line, which is fair, but, like, even more reason not to get stuck with mediocrity. Do not do this to yourself, because not only are you handicapping yourself from a cost per player standpoint, you can't get out of it anymore. You used to be able to at least call an audible, and that's not even a choice anymore. Yeah. Speaking of quarterbacks paid way too much money, that happens a little bit here in the NFC East. I was taking a look at that division. I, honest to God, I can tell you right now, with certainty, on October 17th, I have no damn clue who's going to win that division. No guess. I got nothing. Mm. I know that sounds silly, but if you told me it was the Commanders, I'd believe you. If you told me the Cowboys are only a game back and playing awful one, I'd believe you. If you told, like, the Eagles, sure. I just don't know. Does anyone have any kind of feel on the NFC East right now? Because while the Commanders are playing the best football, typically I wouldn't push my chips in the middle for a team starting a rookie quarterback with more unknowns than teams who have been to Super Bowls, been to NFC title games recently, been better franchises overall. I just got no feel for that. I feel like every other division, I can either choose the winner right now or give you one of the two teams who I think's winning it. And I got no idea, other than I don't think it'll be the Giants. I guess that's the only one. Had they won last week, maybe. They'd have been 3-2 and in the same spot as everyone else. And Malik Nabers is coming back, who was a really good player for them the first couple of weeks. Who's your guess?
I think it's the Commanders.
But you don't say that with, like, your chest, right?
No, when we didn't know. When we did our preseason predictions, I have to go back. You can find the audio. It doesn't matter. Ultimately, none of us ended up picking the Commanders, but we had a real conversation about, hey, if there was going to be a surprise team, Commanders. Yeah. I remember this only because we had someone text in that thought we were insane about it, and I remember because it was like a vivid conversation we ended up having. So the Commanders, am I stunned there where they're at right this second? Yes. Did I think they were going to be a 3-win football team? No, if that makes sense. I thought if because of the ceiling of Jaden Daniels, we can play the audio, I'm not making this up. We said, hey, their ceiling could be higher because there's room for growth. We know what the ceiling is for a lot of teams. But with Jaden Daniels, if they were able to find the right guy, Dan Quinn's got a proven defense, even though the defense is actually their weakness right now, then maybe they would surprise some people. I'm stunned it's happened so soon, though. Like, I thought maybe in the back half of the season they'd start playing really well and push for a wild card then. Mm-hmm. They're pushing for a division title.
Yeah, shout out to them. You mentioned, Alex, the quarterback paying issues and all mm-hmm. that stuff. Well, is there an out potentially for the Cleveland Browns and Deshaun Watson? Evan Cohen.
What out?
here we go. Evan Cohen is he's a host of Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio in the mornings. Said or proposed this trade. Who says no? Deshaun Watson, a 2026 first-round pick, a 2027 conditional second that can become a first to Carolina for Bryce Young. In the end, the Panthers would cut Deshaun Watson, and the Browns would eat most of the money while also trying to gain a quarterback that potentially can still do something with their career.
I will say, one time in NFL history, it's probably like 5 years ago, I watched a team trade a pick, had a team. Now, in this case, it was not the Browns who ate the money. Getting the pick means you eat it. Tough. Cash is yours. Figure it out, Carolina. I actually don't think this is the craziest day.
Is Carolina that down bad?
Man, they're down real bad.
The thought of this format of a trade, if you will, the structure of a trade, comes from exactly what you're saying. It's because someone was reminded that the Cleveland Browns did this with Brock Osweiler with the Texans. So that's why, like, that's, I'm sure, what the framework and why this individual is thinking of it, because, oh yeah, the Browns actually did something similar. They're the ones that didn't eat the money the last time. But yeah, that was the whole Brock Osweiler Houston Texans trade.
It worked. It did. Like, it actually is a good strategy, because you get the quarterback off your roster, so you're no longer forced to play him. The acquiring team pays less. Guarantees don't matter as much. Guarantees matter less. The dead cap number go down to the team.
Panthers basically
who had the player before, but
Bryce
they
but you got control. Obviously, you're not
the question is
deal.
Is getting rid of Deshaun Watson worth a first round pick to you? Is getting rid of Deshaun Watson worth
point,
a second
be.
Round pick to you?
I think
you,
yes.
You have to move on.
How
you have to move on from him, man.
I agree.
You have to cut your losses and get the hell out of it if you're the Browns. I just don't know if the Panthers are going to play ball on that, though.
And then somehow, maybe Kevin Stefanski, coach of the year, obviously all of that stuff, guy that can, maybe he can make something of Bryce Young. Who knows? That would be the ultimate bonus. And then I guess theoretically, Deshaun Watson would never play quarterback again, correct?
If
his career is over.
I mean, maybe somebody decided to be a backup. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, if I were the Panthers, I'd consider. How many years away am I from competing? 5? Maybe another quarterback? Get a first-round pick.
They don't have a quarterback. They don't have a quarterback, so, I mean, it could be 5 years or more.
Yeah. Now, at least you get 2 first-round picks. Maybe one of those could be another quarterback.
Random question.
For you, Gold. For you, Drew. Text line 913-586-7965. We'll take your answers over on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook. Please like and subscribe at TheFan96.5. Question I have for you today comes via Stephen A. Smith.
Okay.
He gave a scenario and said how he would handle it. So I'm going to play you an audio, and then I want you to tell me what you would do in this situation. It involves what you would do if you clogged your friend's toilet.
At Greg 1-667-6935-420. Stephen A. Smith, if you're at a friend's house and clog the toilet and there's no plunger, what do you do? Very, very simple. You close the toilet bowl. You call your friend and say, your damn toilet's clogged. I'm very, very sorry, but you didn't tell me your toilet was going to clog. Do you have a plunger? If not, I suggest you go get one. Because I didn't know I was going to clog the damn thing. I didn't know your toilet was going to work. My bad. But that's what happened. Okay? You ain't got no choice. What if you sit up there and just leave, and then they come into their house and they see you clog their toilet and you never told them? That's very rude. That's very rude, and it's very nasty. And you don't want to be responsible for.
So what's the play?
Did you see the follow-up to that, by the way?
No.
So the guy who sent it right below it said, please, Steven, answer soon. I'm stuck in here.
That's funny. That's good. That's hilarious. No, look, if you're at like a really good friend's, like some,
let's do casual friend.
Oh, casual friend.
Tougher situation.
Yeah.
Casual friend.
Because if it's a really good friend, you can joke about it, like, dude, man, and your damn toilet, I just clogged.
Sorry, man. Yeah. I need you to get a plunger.
If
do you have one in the house? Do you
casual
have
friend,
store.
Casual friend, if the plunger is not underneath the, you know, because first you're looking next to the toilet, or you're going under the sink and seeing if there's the plunger in there, and you're handling it yourself, right? That's what we all would do, I would hope.
If, that's option one.
If there's not a plunger, I think you have to go out there and be like, yeah, you know, if you're with a large group of people, like, hey, I think your toilet's clogged. You have a plunger. I'll take care of it. But can I grab a plunger? I think that's what I would do. That's what I think you have to do.
What's your road pooping strategy anyway? You pooping in other people's houses a lot anyway?
I try not to.
If it's
avoidable.
Well. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes, you know how this works.
Yeah, sometimes you can't.
I think that Stephen A. is actually right. I think confessing is your only option. Strictly just leaving in that scenario, or the only other choice is to blame someone else. Hey, man, I just went in to use the bathroom. Toilet's not working.
Oh, I think nobody's going to buy.
There's a large group of people.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a huge party with 40 people, you can do that. But if it's just you and 3 other friends, you're not going to convince anybody that it wasn't. They're like, dude, I haven't been in the restroom. Nobody's going to buy that unless you're at a house party with 40 people.
Mm. I mean, but in a larger party, you might be able to get away with that.
I mean, well, let me throw that. You know, not too long ago, I broke a toilet.
You did.
My parents' house.
Is that worse?
Yeah, because that's a $600 expense or whatever. A plunger, the toilet's not broken. You just got to unclog it. So that would be my question. What if what happened to me, like you were in your friend's house and the porcelain just started cracking? And you know the toilet is broke. What do you do there? Like, obviously, you got to tell them. You can't just walk out.
I mean, you don't have a choice. You got to tell them.
Your toilet. That one, would you be like, it must be. That one I would feel like, I would just be like, I clearly didn't do anything wrong. Like, your toilet broke. Like, your toilet sucks, man.
Right.
Like,
I don't know what to tell you.
Sorry, I guess I'll help pay for it. But like, I didn't. You think I just slammed the sledgehammer on the porcelain? No, I sat down like I've done 100 times, 1,000 times in my life.
It was pretty normal. Now, over on Twitch, Legend said, it's like, yeah, that's what you do. You got to tell him and then deal with it. He said, now, if this were a girl's house that he was trying to get with, he said, I'd jump out the window and ghost him. Never, never see them again. Never start up another conversation again.
You know, you've been talking to this girl. You finally go over to her house. You're watching Netflix, and you're like, I got to run to the hopefully you would already taken care of this, but you got to run to the restroom, and you know.
Again, sometimes there's no option.
The whole night's ruined. The whole night's ruined.
You
got to
make an excuse and get out. Be like, well, got a call. See ya.
Yeah, you better hope you're not talking to her.
I think the reality is you may never have to talk to that person ever again. Like, how do you? I mean, like, she better have a good sense of humor about it, man. Because owning up or never speaking to that person again are the only two options.
I would hope that you're not doing number two if it's only like the first time you've ever been to her house. You're just not doing that there.
Sometimes
you're just not doing it there. Now, if you've been in a relationship for months, it's a little bit different. Like everybody, but if it's like the first time that she's at your place, or you're at her place, and you just got to avoid it.
You got to avoid everything in your power to not go to the.
You got to make sure your body is good to go before you get there.
I also think I would borderline make an excuse to be like, hey, you know what? God, we should have gotten some more wine or some chocolate or a snack. I'm getting to the gas station by myself.
Yes.
See what I'm saying?
Okay.
If duty's calling immediately and you're in the, like, make an excuse to be like, oh, I can't believe I should have grabbed an extra bottle of wine.
I'm running to the gas station.
Then she says, chocolate. Yes. No.
Then she says, oh, I'll go with you. No, I got it. I got it. Don't worry.
You relax.
I got it.
You catch up on your show. You got to get out of the house.
I think you try to avoid it, but you don't vehemently deny her. Be like, all right, fine. And then when you get in there, be like, I need to go to the restroom or whatever real quick, and you just take care. You act like nothing's up. I don't know. But yeah, you have to take care of that before you go over.
I think it'd be borderline better to say you don't feel good.
Go to the restroom.
And I think it'd be borderline to be better to say than risk it to say I don't feel well.
I don't feel great. I feel like I'm going to throw up. Nothing's not right. Let's just do this another night. I apologize.
Yeah.
Versus destroying the bathroom.
Yeah, but then she knows if you
in the toilet.
Oh, if you went though, like I don't.
If you went too late.
Yeah.
You got to solve these problems.
Someone said they were having sex in the bathroom, broke the sink, and just left.
And just never called again?
The person they had sex with was not the owner of the home, as you can imagine this scenario.
Oh, that's too bad.
Is it too bad? That is the random.
Someone said you guys are weak. Just let it rip.
Someone says if she can joke about it, maybe you can marry her. Good sense of humor, you know?
Again, the initial thing was just like, what happens if you clog the toilet?
Yeah.
That was the initial question. All right. Up next, let's talk some fantasy football with Paul Charchian of GuillotineLeagues.com. A revenge game maybe for a couple players this week, and what are you doing with this Thursday night game fantasy football wise? We'll do that next here on Cody and Gold.